Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business. From liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly on Bloomberg Radio.
All right, so I'm going to make a confession here on air. We talk about a lot of books.
Yes.
And we get to read a lot of books, or we get handed a lot of books. And, yep, you know, we sort of flip through them and we have discussions with authors. There are very, very few that I pick up. I flip them open on the train and then I'm just in. And I was totally in on this book from the get-go. It's called This Could Be Our Future. It's a manifesto for a more generous world. Yancey Strickler, he's the co-founder of Kickstarter, former CEO. He is the author of this book.
You tick so many boxes with us.
Yeah, it's really great. It's really great. He's here with us in New York City. He's based out in LA, but here in our studio. And I have to say, there are so many questions I have for you, but I guess the first is, why this book? Why now?
Yeah, great question. I mean, it started for me with when I lived here in the city. I lived here for almost 20 years, and I lived in the Lower East Side. And there was a crystallizing moment where there was a old punk dive bar in the neighborhood called Mars Bar.
Yeah.
And it got torn down and replaced by a TD Ameritrade bank. And what's crazy is it was the fourth one within a 15-minute walk of that same corner. And as someone who lived in the neighborhood, I'm like, is there some glitch in the matrix where random storefronts get switched to, like, you know, cell phone stores and banks overnight? I mean, it was that dramatic. And there ended up being Wall Street Journal reporting around that at the time. Why are there so many banks? And there had been an increase of almost 1,000 banks in the city over the previous 10 years. And so I just started asking why. And so I ended up connecting. I came to think that the same reason why there were banks everywhere was the same reason why every movie was a sequel, the same reason why Taylor Swift is on the cover of every magazine. And it's this implicit belief that the right choice in any decision is just whichever option makes the most money. And that's become a simple sort of calculus that we use to organize and operate our decisions that works some of the time. But then you have weird moments where your neighborhood gets overtaken by bank branches and you're like, wait, what is the logic here?
What?
And that your life, almost without you having any say in it, fundamentally changes. Your daily experience fundamentally changes because of these forces that truly are beyond your control.
Yeah. Well, I think what's interesting is what happened, you know, where it went from making money was a good thing and many people benefited as a result of it to making money became such a terrible thing.
I don't think it's a terrible thing.
And in the hands of just a few.
Yeah. I don't think it's a terrible thing. I think that the goal of financial growth is an intelligent one. But we keep expecting that if we just grow the capital base, that we can just use that money to solve everything else. But I think we're finding that the transaction fees for that are very high. And pricing in externalities is very difficult. Like the fact that you can still get a 30-year mortgage on beachfront property in America right now is crazy. Like, we are not yet really registering what's happening around us. So as I thought about this question, and I'm a huge optimist about the world and human beings, and I look at what we've created in the pursuit of money, and it's truly amazing what we've created. I mean, look at the building we're in.
Just
I mean, the
around.
City
yeah.
we're in. It's truly amazing. But what would happen if we switched gears? What would happen if we saw something different? And I came to think that maybe the biggest potential for us could be a real expansion of how we see our self-interest and how we see value, because right now we operate according to the belief that what's in our rational self-interest is what we want and need right now. It's just all about now.
Well, we talk about this certainly with the retail markets and the shopping market. We've had the author of Fashionopolis on, and how you're starting to slowly see kind of this pushback against fast fashion, because first of all, we all just end up having so much stuff, but you also have workers who are making not a lot of money to produce all of it. Like, there's just some really bad consequences
as a result. The phrase I use in the book to talk about that is, I say the image that comes to mind when I picture what's happening is the mullet.
Yeah.
And the mullet is the pinnacle of 80s hair technology, you know, business in front, party in the back. And so we are living in the mullet economy, where for 90% of people, for workers, it is business in front, with wage freezes, layoffs, more job insecurity than ever before. And then for the top 1-10% is the party in the back of CEO compensation or executive compensation up 1,000% since the 70s. And so we're on this track where for 90% of people, they keep losing out. 43% of Americans can't pay their bills every month right now. And it just keeps going to this top group. And it's just not, you know, a mullet's cool,
We talked about the two stories about B of A getting these, big bonuses again for like the third year in a row. And then we had another story about a lot of people tapping into these, you know, mega debt, middle class getting hooked on debt with 100% rates. Like, the dichotomy that is going on right now. And that's the big, like the most read stories here.
I have a chart in the book that I made that shows the pay rates of American workers and show where they froze. Like 1973, workers really stopped getting raises. So the high point for the average American worker for pay per productivity was 1973, the same year Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon came out. It's a long time ago, and now we're all comfortably numb to this new normal. But I have this chart where I layer over top of the income, I layer the introduction of the credit card, which was the first credit cards happened in 1966. There was zero credit card debt in America in 1966.
Wow.
Starting in 1970s, when income stopped growing, credit cards filled the gap. So if you actually look at the amount of credit card debt held by American families, those are the pay raises. So you can imagine that instead of giving people raises, we gave them credit cards instead, because it makes more money if it's future debt, right? It's following the same mentality. So people are getting by, but they're doing it with debt now instead of pay.
And I don't know how it was with your parents, but like my parents, there's like no debt. Like they bought their house.
Yeah.
Like they didn't, the credit card, things were paid off. I remember when my father got the first credit card, like it was, but they used it responsibly.
Right.
Sorry, Jason.
So I just have to ask you, because we only have about a minute left. You do strike a pretty optimistic tone, actually, throughout this book. And the second half is really sort of, what do we do? You look forward to 2050. You talk about, you know, the next generations who will sort of run this stuff and a different sort of way of doing it. And it, in part, you have a window into it because of Kickstarter, which you founded. Help us understand where we may go from here. I wish we had more time, but let us know.
The future is about balancing financial and non-financial values, right? And currently, when we have discussions of financial versus non-financial, it's like a rational versus an emotional argument. But we need to get in place where both of these are rational arguments, where we agree on the importance of the sustainability of our lifestyles, or we agree on the importance of social cohesion, and that those things can be really put into our decision-making.
Yeah.
So I create a framework I call Bentoism, which is a way to do that. But to me, expanding our self-interest, expanding what we think of as rational value, that's how we keep playing to our strengths as human beings.
Yeah.
And we keep bettering this, just as all of our ancestors did for us. Like, this is our moment to step up for all the generations to follow.
Well, I do certainly feel like it's a conversation that more and more folks are having, including the corporate community.
Yeah.
So,
And I do think we both have teenagers. I think teenagers are having this conversation in a very, and I say that in a very optimistic way. It's a phenomenal book. I couldn't recommend it more. This Could Be Our Future, A Manifesto for a More Generous World. Yancey Strickler is the author, co-founder, former CEO of Kickstarter.